went through the veil. They are such men that among them is the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. That's good. I'd talk to the secretary to start preparing himself for the advancement of the public hearing on the employment equity and employment services amendment bill, public employment services. So is that one with us now? Okay, yeah, we will. Yeah, it will be here by Friday. Another thing that if what we could do is to start processing that making applications as if we have it with us. Because we're definitely sure to be with us. Can you put your head on the clock for them? I'm going to bring. I'll bring an egg and one on Friday. And this week I'll be sharpening it. And you put me as a beneficiary. Let's give over to Mkhalitsi. Just where were we? And then. The lawyer is in the office, our lawyer.
My colleague wants to comment before.
Dr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. I think I still owe the committee, and I think I was fine with the committee going for lunch. I still owed an answer with the Chair, but I can respond to that quickly. I think it's one of the honourable members asked about the clause 6. The certificate issue? There was a question on the certificate issue. We got offered a gang in our office about it. The certificate is fine, it is a buffer, but our concern was that it's not unchallengeable. Giving a certificate to say that the ballot was done is not enough. Some can still challenge that. So yes, we see that it was included, as my colleague for the department said, the kind of tie and a buffer there. Giving allowing to challenge and all that, but that is also open to challenge. And then with that, there was also a comment about a violent crime, that it is there to prevent violent crime. If you look at the Constitution in Section 17, the Constitution only protects peaceful gatherings and peaceful populations. So that, in any case, if something is violent, your constitutional protection is not there anymore to fight and to gather. So that, along with the certificate, we don't see it as a foolproof clause. It's there for a reason, but it's not foolproof. And ultimately, it will be down to the decision of the committee with it that he just decided to use or not. Okay, I don't know if it helps. I think it helps, but I just needed to convey our office position of the week and so on. Thank you.
But the violent men and action against those who get involved in violence is a police matter, you know, and it's a matter that belongs to the justice class that will deal with those matters.
Okay. We went up to close 6. And 7 is just a technical amendment. It's an addition first of any other employment law, this act and any other employment law. Therefore, it means all the BCA will come in and the others. And the changes the Wage Act, the Basic Condition of Employment Act. Those are just two technical amendments. And then not any significant chair. I'm not sure whether should I take it as a grave or something like that.
Honorable members, there is any comments and Okay.
Now, clause 8. The act, if you look at the act as it stands now, section 67 of the act of the LRA dealing with strikes and lockouts. The act, what's the term? Gives immunity for workers to take part in the strike, section 67. Except that you do not commit a breach by taking part in a protected strike and all of those issues. That is not there. And chapter 6 also goes further and prevents civil profiting. And it says that the civil legal procedure may not be instituted against any person for participating in a strike. The amendment that is being made here, it includes, and then subchapter 8 of the Act is an exclusion of what does not apply in these areas I'm talking about. Chapter 2 is a civil claim. That says you cannot be civilly liable for participating in the strike. Chapter 6 is chapter 2 is a breach that you cannot be held liable, and then chapter 6 is a breach. And then chapter 8 says, despite that protection, if you involve in an action or lockout, that is if you commit an offense during that period, chapter 6, make an exception and say, well, we protect you against the right to strike and all those issues. But if you commit an offense during that, that protection really does not then apply to you. That's what chapter 8 is trying to do. Now, the amendment there is just to include also if you breach your terms of your picketing rules, as it says there, if the offense, anything that you do is in breach of the material breach of the picketing agreement established in terms of section 49, therefore, it would be one of the exclusions. I'm not sure what I'm going to say on this. The act as we speak now has got exclusion. Nothing new that we can see. The act says you are protected against prosecution, you are protected against unnecessary breach. If a person does not commit a breach of contract by taking part in the strike, therefore, you are protected. You cannot be dismissed for taking part in the strike. That's what 6.2 says. 6.6 says, You are protected for taking a trust. You cannot be civilly held liable. At 6.6, for protecting a trust. 6.8 says, but if your action that you take it, if that is an offense, if what you do is an offense in terms of this act, then you are not protected in terms of the issue. That's what the law reads now. The addition there is not underlining. Or is a material breach of picketing agreement. If you've got a picketing agreement and then you breach that picketing agreement, for whatever reason you could, a picketing agreement says that you should not involve yourself in damaged property and then go out and burn the factory. Not talking now about the public, not talking about the public, talk about the parties involved, go out and burn factories. This says that protection also goes away in those instances. That's what that does mean. And I thought, I mean, when you read it and not saying that's what the act says, you would not understand clearly. But that's the issue, and that's why I just have to explain it clearly so that we all understand what is it trying to do, what is the implication of that. It is in fact in line with, who is this man? With Jarvis, who says that. Is it problem with judgment, the Western Cape? Yeah, cover judgment on violence in the Western Cape. It is in line also with that, because cover judgment, and which is confirmed by the Constitutional Court, hold a trade union, or anybody else who is involved in public protest, if damages take place there. And this is directed at the parties themselves, this one, the area, parties themselves. Well, if it happens in the public, generally, then the judgment comes into play. Are there questions? If you look at clause 2, remember the discussion that we had in clause 2, page 4B where it says any person other than the employer who controls access to benefit of organizational rights. It's the same principle here, where it's holding third parties responsible as long as they've been informed, which is owned by premises which are owned by control, but a person other than the employer, and as long as that person has made an opportunity. Now, it's extending that principle of holding third parties responsible towards not only Section 21 rights, because previously when we were discussing it, it was about organizational rights, the trade union looking to access, and now they've got an arbitration that says they can access the rights, and that binds also third parties deeply affected. Now, this one binds third parties generally in other areas other than organizational rights. That means 9A10. And now, the next part that is being introduced here, it's a long area dealing with labor code. Let's say a union is involved in a strike, there's the ticketing argument, there's violence. In front of the gate, people are being beaten, property is being damaged. There are three parts in terms of this section can go to the labor court and ask the labor court that the labor court must force the other party to comply with the argument. Can say if the union is not complying with the argument or if the employer is not complying with the agreement, the party who's agreed can go to the labor court and say, we want you to order that the other party comply with the agreement. The labor court, in terms of this, can also suspend the strike in terms of the powers that they are keeping now. Or if it's an employer, the labor court could decide that the employer should not appoint what we call scarce labor in the strict limit. Honorable Ngamba would understand that more than replacement labor. The law talks about replacement labor, but in the Israel they talk about dead labor. And then the labor court would be able to prevent that. I mean, this issue of dead labor has been a demand of labor since 1995. And the death section indicates that the number of hours, 48 hours, that must be given for urgent relief. Remember, in the 1956 Act, there was something called urgent relief. You could go to court for urgent relief, and they argue for, and then you reinstated on the urgent relief, and all those issues. And that went away with 1995, and now in these areas around about picketing, it brings back the issue of urgent relief, especially in areas where there's violence and there's the of property. You want the court to take an urgent decision on those issues and giving all those hours. And then it gives also the court the opportunity to reduce the hours that are put in. Instead of 48 hours, the court might say, no, 12 hours is enough. The other party has got to get the notice. These are all the issues. For fair justice, and to make sure that the other party has got a reasonable opportunity to answer. You don't want a situation where you can go to court in the middle of the night and the court make a judgment without the other party doing that. So, that's what the trying to avoid. The union is out on strike, and then the employer holds for us open in the morning to the judge and to make an application. The following morning they wake up, they the ruling that the judge has made. I mean, this is trying to make sure that you don't have those kind of situations. That's it. That's a clause 9.
Chair, this insertion of 12, when I look at it from just looking at it, it impacts on the right to strike. So it actually says that you have got the right to strike
but there are conditions under which you have that life. So it is not unfettered. And that's the reason why I believe that our earlier argument is not impeding on the right to life. Before life, that discussion we had indicate that is what is proposed there and can be implemented, because even here, that the right of Christ is not an absolute right. Under certain conditions, it can be restricted. So the process towards going that side is not a restriction and does not interfere with the right of Christ. I'm just highlighting that here is very clear and it's understandable. I'm not opposing it, understandable. And I want the other members to understand my previous debate. I'm not opening it. But I'm just highlighting that it gives us a room to look at the previous debate without opening it too much.
There is somebody saying Paganini used a very bad example. It's okay. Are there further comments from the members on this one?
So don't say that the member is correct. This section says you got rights, but there are responsibilities. That's what, and if you exercise your rights recklessly, there are consequences. That's what it says. It says you got rights, exercise your rights, and if you exercise them recklessly, there are consequences. And that was the member going to consider whether those consequences are they strong, are they needed. We must say that on this area, at Midland, later was dead against the section of this section of being responsible and the striking people to home to sustain the strike. They liked the issue on care labor. They liked the issue. Business did not like the issue of scape labor. But they, at the end, indicated if it is an exchange for this, they are prepared to live with it. But they don't like it, anything that takes away the right. Remember, for business, that's a tool that they bought to undermine the trust by getting scape labor in. And they didn't like it. Therefore, that's the opportunity of the parties that matter. I'm putting it, I'm not saying that the member cannot change anything, but that's the issue in terms of the two areas.
Apply your mind to get to come back and
okay, sir. Now close the chain. I mean, there's nothing there to close the chain really, other than that the minister must establish the essential labor quality. That's an able provision that enables the minister to establish a certain committee. And it's just really different because the minister is entitled to set it up now in the present act, but it's really written properly that he could do it after consulting Netland and where it's placed. That's what 10 says. 11 talk to the composition of the committee. And I must say again here, at Netland, there's no disagreement in this area in terms of the committee, the composition. Because the intention here is to make sure that the committee is broadened, more people come into the committee, so that the committee can effectively do its job. Presently, there's limited capacity in the committee for it to perform properly. And the intention of this composition proposal is to bring more, and if you look on this, He's bringing in commissioners, he's bringing in people that represent the party itself. He's pushing the number to by constituencies, and that's what the conversation is doing. And for us, it's not that we don't think that's a very controversial proposal. Any partners may say, but never in Parliament decide on the issue. We don't think there's any legal complication of that.
I'm not sure that I give you the all of it.
Because we have the prospect of being one by one. Amendment of 198.
Thank you, Maya. Okay.
The next one is talk about the power and funding of the committee, what the committee can do.
What the committee should be able to do. Now, the only thing here. It's given all the powers and what it can do that were in the committee before, but it just is now spelling it out in terms of the law. In the present act, it's not spelled out what are the powers and the functions of the judicial committee, and it doesn't change anything in terms of what is there in terms of the new one that we put in. It's not an area that were not controversial at all. The next area deals with the appointment of the panel members. How many of them, who nominate, who appoint them. It's a normal process that goes through NEDLAC. Also, it's not an area that there's any controversy around. There's nothing around that. And then the next one deals with the powers and function of the panel, what the panel can do in terms of this area. Now, the next one deals with the jurisdiction and administration of the Essential Service Committee and then how it will be financed then where it's placed where the money comes in, what's the responsibility of the CMA, and the next very that enable provision for regulation and 7.1 deal with the allocation of work amongst themselves, how they allocate work amongst themselves in terms of this section, whether there should be a government rep in the representation, and also what is new now. Normally, government has never been represented in this essential service community. 71A is a controversial one.
So is that the change?
Yes, the change is in the composition. Presently, it's only business and labor that sits in the committee, and the minister appoints the chair. But the government has not had a rep representing them. Now, that has been changed. The minister appoints the chair, but the composition is made up of equal representation, business, labor, and government. 71 is that section that deals with public official exercising authority in the name of the state. We've discussed this area. And we indicated where it's coming from and why is it in, and it limits these public officials to customs officials, immigration officers, and judicial officers, and officials working in the administration of justice. I'm not sure whether that's you guys. The state law advisors and them, I'm not sure that they work in the administration of justice, they would know. But those are the kind of officials that the state, it does not make them essential. It does not make them essential. What it does is that the state can now approach the Essential Service Committee and say, we're making an application for these workers, because they exercise authority in the state in this sense, and this is, if they go out on strike, this is the effect it will have to the state if they go out on strike, and therefore their dispute should be dealt with through arbitration, like concession arrangement. That's what this section does. It says, instead of the state having to go and justify life and limb, because presently the law says that you can only be essential if you go on strike, your strike has got propensity to affecting life and limb. Now, this proposal is putting a second test, and that test is that you exercise authority in the name of the state in this section, either in custom officials, immigration officers, judicial officers, officials working in the administration of justice. That's the limitation. Therefore, it does not include teachers, because they are not there. It does not include the nurses and the own work. It talks only for those sectors. The next section talks to minimum service level agreement. Now, this section is trying to solve the problem in the labor market where there are no minimum service level agreements. The law presently expects that there will be minimum service level agreement, ESCO, that says, for a strike to take place here, ESCO needs at least 50% of the people to be working so that they can maintain sure that there's life when members of parliament are in meetings. It's not done. That's the intention of minimum service level agreement. But those service level agreements have never been entered. And now this deal will start. This is another area where there's been 100% agreement by all parties. There's no disagreement here. It's giving the commission, the international service committee, more power around that area of service level agreement. What to do if parties don't agree, what is it that they need to do. That's what 72 deal with. On the issue of minimum service, if there is a thing called minimum service in terms of the Act, that is 15, it's a small amendment where parties are encouraged to enter into agreements if they are maintaining the minimum services. Remember, in the situation like the mines, if you do not maintain the tenancy and the strike, that by the time you come back, the mine might be gone. I mean, there are companies where if you stop the tenancy, if you want to restart in the glass industry, if you want to restart it, it's finished. Therefore, in terms of the law now, the law allows for maintenance agreement. Those workers cannot go on strike, and it's treated differently, and those workers, and you cannot, in a company that has got a maintenance agreement, can't employ replacement labor, and the workers that are not in the maintenance section can strike on behalf of the others in order to make sure that these workers do not go and strike. This talks about collective agreement that provides for that maintenance, because the law already provides for it. That's, I'll hold on the thought. I'll even go further than this.
Does that mean when you strike on behalf of others, the law have no pain applies to you on their behalf?
Yeah.
They still pain.
But there's another area where there's no collective scared labor allowed on that. They can pay because they're working. The social solidarity is all about.
No, it's clear. We strike on behalf of country. No pay applies to you.
You are protected, David. You can continue.
And that's
Honorable Hanari will raise it at 21.
Those are the issues around the social services, Chair. I mean, I've summarized them. They range from 11 up to 15. That's all about essential services and the issues affecting them. And as I've said, that all of them at NEDLAC are all agreed, straightforward. The only differences are in 718, clause 13. And there was also the issue of parliamentary services, where, remember, the present law now says parliamentary services are essential. Labour said no, they must go away, can't be essential. And there's even a question in the labour market, parliamentary services vis-a-vis provincial parliaments. And our answer is that, well, provincial parliaments are not really parliaments, they are legislature. They are not parliament in terms of the law, therefore the parliamentary service doesn't apply to them because they are not parliament, they are legislature. And then we say the legislature has an intention to differentiate between the two when it calls in the constitution them legislature, not parliament. Therefore they are not part of this because they are not in parliament, they are legislature. The next issue that raised was the fact that Labour argue that, look, the fact that an arbitration award awarded in the public sector, especially in the public sector, cannot be binding. It gives members of parliament the final authority. The arbitrator meets and decide and say, okay, public sector workers who are essential or out of strike. Remember, this in terms of issue strategies. It is expected that these two essential services will be resolved through arbitration. And in the private sector, there's no issue. The arbitration award becomes binding to the parties. The law says in the public sector, that arbitration award cannot be binding. It must be, the minister has 14 days to submit in parliament, and parliament must either pronounce that the award is fine, they're happy, or they can pronounce that this award is not binding on us. And they are arguing that therefore it does not encourage arbitration in the public sector, because the law says that they will argue that doctors should amend, should go away, we do not agree. It's not part of the amendment. It's not part of the amendment, because in the amendment, what corroded to the amendment, it's what government is comfortable with. Because even with negotiations, this becomes a government document. If that government does not accept a proposal from business, it will become, they can come and lobby parliament about it, but it won't be on the bill, or don't raise it at nothing. The only people that are allowed to put issues in the bill is the government. If government agrees with business, then they will put it here. If they agree with labor, then they will put it here. If there's not disagreement, it won't see the day. And that's the principle of it. But I'm raising these issues so people current so that you can understand what are the issues raised by the parties around this area. We disagree with Labour on the issue of Parliament. Parliament is the highest authority of this country. You can't have a situation of a threat or a strike just before the State of the Nation address and the parties vote, and then there's a strike in Parliament that threatening that preparation, therefore we're not going to be able to accept that. And on the issue of on the issue of the arbitration award, we said, look, we do not have a mandate of this. This issue is an issue that was put by MPs. It does make sense in a way, in that if MPs came now, even now, change many bills. If the arbitrator, if the Department of Finance, the Minister of Finance now decide, he has spoken to you, to members of Parliament, and says that we must reduce the public sector bill. So they said, if we budget a 2% increase in the budget of the public sector, and the arbitration award has got the effect of increasing, going outside that, coming back to Parliament, it gives Parliament a chance through the money bill process to try and move money around to cater for that. that was the thinking when we introduced. But the argument by Lipa is that discourages parties to go to arbitration in the public sector or in social services because the decision is not final.
Honorable Konari, you have your hand up.
I'm very happy. I'm not happy.
You are very happy.
I'm very happy with the explanation. I understand where the department is going.
And if the parliament goes on strike, then we bring the army.
Yeah.
And we have from lieutenant up. Being in parliament, that will bring the council. So we have to change the rules.
That is, I think, first of my issue is on insertion of Section 71A, the public officials exercising authority in name of state. I mean, for me, it's going to be total loss. I'm going to say what of that, in good hope that you put in place a structure that has to deal with matters of essential services, and they've got powers, they've got the composition, and everything else. Now, the question I'm asking myself, why then these officials that are mentioned here cannot follow the same route, I mean, that is in place in terms of amendments as we speak now. You can't have an institution that has to deal with a particular situation, and then on the other hand, you do something that is contrary to that. You are making that institution that you have put in place, the essential committee, which is in terms of the act, and even with these amendments, increasing the number of participants in the committee itself. They are going to deal with it to us. Another thing is the issue which Mr. McCallie, the issue of minimum service agreement. I agree with you, it's difficult with those, but then now, these amendments are empowering even the committee also to look at that. Then I don't see why we have that amendment, that insertion of Section 71A, really. That's the first one. The third point is, you see, maybe the state law advisors must come in here. Once you have a legislation that deals with labor, and in an event where a particular operation, it is decided that it's an essential service, so therefore workers in that operation cannot go to strike. After they are matters of interest, disputes of interest, instead of them, where labor power applies. So, hence the social services. Not the social services. Is that in an event where there's a dispute, so if the dispute is not resolved, instead of exercising power, it will go to arbitration. Now, in that way, you are making those workers who are in that operation not to embark on strike. That is clear. Now, if it will, the arbitration award will be binding to parties in a particular sector, and then in another sector it won't, it has to go another route. I don't see that. It's like having two legislations in the same level that you say these labor legislations that are put in place are supposed to apply to all workers in the country. So this one of saying in the public sector, so therefore the application of law is not binding, unless then now Parliament take a decision. Now, why do you have to have the arbitration if then if the arbitration, there's an arbitration law, it can't be binding unless it goes to Parliament. To me, I don't understand. It's like having two labor legislation in the same workers that are supposed to be covered by that legislation. So I've been fighting the state law advisor. That's how I see it. That you will say, no, no, because you are private sector. Just because you are private sector, yours, irrespective of how much have you budgeted to run the business for that particular financial year, to you, whether a particular section of operation is in special services, the arbitration award binds you. But it is me. It is me. It doesn't. It must go somewhere else. So you got a level to appeal in a way. You are appealing against the arbitration award, which the other sector does not have that liberty. That's how I see it. I don't find it doesn't sit comfortably with me. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we need to bring Honorable Nyakembo on board, because we, and all of us, we don't actually understand the separation in terms of treatment, that everybody is treated this way, but when it comes to other workers in our sector, something different applies. So, Honorable Makubele Masha.
This is not a legal issue. This is a policy issue. I don't think that there's a legal infringement in the law. It's a policy issue that was taken then. I mean, the issue of the award was taken then. No lawyer will tell you that it's contrary to law. Not contrary to law, but a policy choice where Parliament then said you can't leave the control. Remember, federal expenditure makes a big chunk of government expenditure. A big chunk. If you don't get it right there, and they say, well, Parliament is the supreme authority in the allocation of money in the country. Anybody that is going to have authority, because what the arbitrator does in that case says, you allocated the money that you allocated is not enough. That's what it's saying, the arbitration. If the arbitrator says, increase your budget, not by 2%, by 4%. He's saying, I'm just not saying it's right or wrong. And I'm just saying, what was the rationale when that decision was taken? And then that's the policy imperative that Parliament, and so it was not, and also during that time, we did not have experience in terms of arbitration decision on wages and working conditions. People were very concerned what would be the effect on the fiscal. Would you have an arbitrator all of a sudden allowing the 22% increase in the public sector, and how would you handle it? That was the issue when this thing happened. And yeah.
Honorable,
you want to convince me? I'm not waiting for the department and this is for an application for a job. But my understanding is that, look, there are a certain group of workers who you identify and say, because you act on behalf of the state, you are not allowed to go on strike. So instead of going on strike, if there's a dispute, you go to arbitration. But when you go to arbitration, the award which will be awarded by the arbitrator will have an impact on the budget which has already been allocated. And therefore, the minister has got the responsibility to go back, I hope it's the Minister of Public Administration, has got to go back to the Minister of Finance, and they have got to talk and to say, hey, is this award. The implication of this award for the whole fiscal is the following. And after they have applied their mind, then they approach Parliament and say, we have already adopted the budget, but we have got this particular award, and we are proposing that the money bill be amended so that it can take this situation into consideration. Sometimes they might say it makes sense, and sometimes they will say, if we agree to this, we are putting the country in more danger, so we have got to make a decision. So I think that's the reason why the fact that it is said that the award is not really binding is just to give the government space to be able to consult internally. And be able to look at all the factors before they can agree to this. That's my understanding, and that's the reason why I agree with it, because to me it's logical, but sometimes something which is logical does not make sense to other people.
Especially
if you're from Israel.
Who's going to do this? Dr. Good. What's your take on this?
Thank you. Members, I think what I discussed with my colleague as well now, just for us to main difference, not necessarily two different systems in one piece of legislation. Because labor laws we said previously allow flexibility that the system allows you to adapt to the circumstances. And what's important for us is when it comes to the public sector, one must always remember that there's a public interest element that will determine will also be affected, you know, with public funds, like the public said. So the public funds and the public interest, and then you have to look at the nature of the job as well. So in the nature of the job, when it comes to essential services, to determine what is essential or not, there must be, the system must allow for adaptability. And I think that's where the operation and the almost like safeguard mechanism come in to allow for it to be adapted as a public interest demand. But it doesn't mean to say that it's very treated differently just because it's public service or private sector and because it's essential or not essential. And but that also fairness does not really it doesn't require us to have precise sameness of treatment every time because no set of circumstances will ever be the same. So it doesn't mean the one must be a carbon copy of the other. It must just be fair in circumstances for the both parties' interests or both side interests to be equally considered. I don't know if that if you want to add. Thank you, Chair. Yes, and that's why we also have the Public Service Act, which regulates the public sector. Because when you work in the public sector, you're governed by the Public Finance Management Act, is governed by various other legislation that one needs to take into account. And when you work in the public sector, the public interest plays a bigger role, I think, than when you work in the private sector. For example, in the private hospital, the public interest may not be as great, and if you were state hospital, would you have got it served or how you would, that's why state, or the state usually has something which is called bipedal principles, all those things, because the focus is on the public interest, so it's great. And so as Dr. Luther said, how do we balance this? How do we give effect to all the rights at play? And as Dr. Luther said, it's not a dual system for the purposes of discrimination, but I think it's how do we accommodate everybody or everything or all the interests, competing interests within one law, one system, legal system. Thanks.
No, sir. You see? Now the argument that I'm hearing is that with the public sector,
it was not the arbitration, it was the advisory arbitration, the way that I interpret it. Because you, that's why there are definitions at the same time. Now, these definitions are to define what is this act all about? What is arbitration? Now, if then, more and above the definition of arbitration, we will use the same labor relations act that defines arbitration differently in different sectors. That's where I've got a problem. I've got a problem in that area where we talk of arbitration. Because advisory arbitration is very clear, it's not binding. Now, to give a room and call it arbitration, but there must be a room of further consultation, whether to agree or to disagree with what the arbitrator has said. It doesn't serve the purpose now of why do matters of mutual interest in the public sector are supposed to be dealt with in a band where a particular operation, they cannot go to a strike, and then the alternative to a strike is to go to arbitration. If then, even in that process again, really, can I look at that?
Will you switch over? I want to check about is Parliament using the PFMA for the MBOR, are they using something else? Can you ask him to that machine? You know, this honorable gentleman, there's this thing. Parliament finances are not managed through the PFMA. That governs the finances in the public sector. It's using another act, AIO, your parliament, which is different from that of the PFMA. So, I'm just saying that we need to put that in mind. And I want, when we go into this discussion, so you shouldn't think PFMA when Parliament is not using it.
I was saying, Chair, on a lighter note, I think you're not going to win this argument with Honorable Yakema. He just wants the parliamentarians to go on strike.
You want to give them the drink.
And the MPs are more.
Solidarity forever. Honorable Makwela, I think to move from this.
I think, the parliamentary staff are not also employed in terms of the Public Service Act. They've got their own act that appoints them. Equally, the financial matters have their own act, but they are in line with the Treasury regulation. Because in the public sector, remember, municipalities have their own municipal financial management act, which is not the same as the PFMA, but it is in line with Treasury regulation. So the Treasury regulations and standards will be more or less the same, but the Act itself will be quite different. But their reporting mechanism is just one standard procedure that should be in line. So Parliament staff on their own are not public servants. So they've got different set of rules. I think.
Honorable Khader.
We are moving very close. Honorable, we have been discussing. The only difference we have is education. we agree with prison. The only difference we have is that to him, arbitration must mean that people award, the equal commissioner gives an award. That should be implemented as is. And what we have to explain to him is that we are not necessarily opposed to the arbitration. We are not saying it's symbolic. We are saying there is arbitration. But the process of implementing that arbitration has got to be within the context of how Parliament works. That the money must be allocated. If there is no money, the arbitration cannot be implemented. And I believe that both the commissioner must be reasonable in the way in which they are going to conduct themselves and the arbitration. And the government will be open to the arbitration. If the arbitrator here gives an award which is not in favor of Parliament, the Parliament would have been utterly unreasonable during the arbitration discussion. And therefore, Parliament would have to be consulted about that. I don't know how to put it, but you can't put it by saying Parliament will... it's more clear when you say the arbitration award is not... what do you call it? Because, I can't use the word compulsory. It's not... it's not final in that way. But maybe the issue where you go to should be, how do you couch it in such a way that Nkemba and those who go along with it understand what you are trying to achieve? That's really the issue. You must try to accommodate his fear.
Section 74, that has a financial implication for the state becomes binding. 14 days after the date of the award. Therefore, after 14 days after the date of the award, it becomes binding. Unless a minister has tabled the award in Parliament within that period. First, it becomes binding. After 14 days, the commissioner makes an award. After 40 days, it becomes binding. Yes, I'm coming.
Yeah.
It becomes binding unless the minister has tabled the award in Parliament within that period, 14 days.
Yeah.
Now, 14 days thereafter, when it's tabled in Parliament, after the date of tabling the award, Parliament has got made a decision. Therefore, 14 days after it's tabled in Parliament, it binds. Unless, again, Parliament passed a resolution that the award is not binding. When Parliament will do that, what will make Parliament do that? Parliament will say the award is not binding because if the award is really unreasonable, it is unaffordable at all, and then Parliament believes that. Because never Parliament has the authority to alter the award. They can't say the award says pay 50%. No, we're not going to pay 50%, we'll pay 20%. We can't do that. The award remains an award. The only thing that Parliament can do can say, no, this award is not binding. Obviously, for good governance and transparency, Parliament should be able to say why it is not binding. It is then that award must go back to the parties and the commissioner. And look at what Parliament, if Parliament says that the 50% that you have awarded, if we implement the 50%, it will mean that we're not going to have money to pay for hospital, for this. We're asking the parties to re-look in the award. That's what the Senator is trying to facilitate. And then the party will have to look at it. Maybe the party will, then the argument put forward, might come back and say, okay, I'm issuing now an award, except 10%. And this is not different. In terms of the law presently, this is not a different situation in this one. If there's a dispute, Honorable Nyemba, if there's a dispute in the private sector about demarcation, there's a dispute between the company and the bargaining council about the scope of the Banking Council, and the CCMA has got to rule on that demarcation. Before that award is final, it's submitted to NEDLAC. NEDLAC must pronounce on that award and say whether they agree with the commissioner or they disagree with the commissioner on this ground. They say, commissioner, we disagree with you because we believe you missed the point here in the demarcation of setup. It's in the law that issue of demarcation where the award is not final, but it can only be final after being submitted in NEDLAC. It's got nothing to do with money. It's not the state. I'm just making an example of provision in the Act where the Act does allow that delay application of award. And all parties are happy with that.
Who says that?
I'm going to move, if we are not agreeing on this one,
yeah.
we put in the parking lot, and then we can engage with it. But I'm going to give you a last bite on this one. Anyone who wants to talk on this will be the last bite. Who wants to talk first? Honorable Khanna.
Look, can I just make this example? Let me say, the CIA succeeds to create a very strong union in South Africa. No, that's not an example. They succeed and create a very strong union which is well supported, well financed. And their intention is just to make sure that the country is ungovernable. And we have agreed that Parliament has got nothing to say. What the arbitration is awarded is awarded. And they put so much pressure that ultimately, and somehow they find a way of creating their own, of getting contact with the commissioner 3 days before the arbitration sitting. And they negotiate and they make a deal with the commissioner. You are just a small commissioner, man. When we have changed government, it will be something very big. And then, at arbitration, the deal comes through and says, no, you give everybody 70%. Or what should say 70% increase. And there is a list of how people were expected since 1912 and since 1652 up to now. And therefore, what they are owed is so much percentage of the money. And therefore, it justifies to give them 70%. The intention has got nothing to do with the aim has got nothing to do with the increase. It's to bank up to the state. And we have got that particular one. And Parliament has no say. They don't have that money. And the budget is about, let me say, 1 trillion rand. But when you put in this amount of money, you have got to get about 1.8 trillion rand to be able to finance this particular award. And Parliament has no say. All of us can see that this is wrong. I mean, all South Africans, but this is not in the interest of the country. But as parliamentarians, we can't say a thing because we must find that particular money. To me, that's the danger of treating this thing like we are treating a company. Because the company, even if they have a vote particular award, the arbitration award, they are going to fight back somehow. The company is going to come up and they rise and they say, when it has been taken over by a counter-revolutionary force, I hope you will not take it back within the next 20 to 25 years.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. There can be no CIA that do what you think can happen. You see, I'm aware, you see, when you move around Parliament, there's no Public Finance Management Act. The Parliament Finance Management Act. I know that. So next to my office, next to Drift, there's a Gandhi board there. It reminds me all the time, so I'm aware of that. But I think that cannot be a certificate. But we say everybody must be subjected in terms of this Labor Relations Act when it comes to matters of essential services.
and then the process of dealing with issues of mutual interest. Now, there's a particular there's part that has not to be bound by how disputes are supposed to be handled when it comes now to parliament staff from other workers in the country. In the same state has got a number of different procedures of how to deal with the workforce of that particular country. In fact, I thought Mr. Mkalibe will also read subsection 6. When he was reading, he only referred us to subsection 5 and read A and B. Because this is saying, if Parliament passed a resolution that the award is not binding, you see? Now, there was an arbitration. And the existence of arbitration is to make sure that the award is going to bind the parties that went to arbitration. Now, this one says, if Parliament passed a resolution that the award is not binding, the dispute must, it's not even saying may, like in all the other sections that you read in the Act, it says must be referred back to the Commission for further consultation between the parties to the dispute. And if that fails, any party to the dispute may request the Commission to arbitrate. That's one thing. You run around in a circle. You run around. There was a consultation before it went to arbitration. Now, because there was no agreement in the process of consultation, that's why it went to arbitration. That's the issue here. And I think that, And I think that the commissioner, the commissioners, I mean, you don't just pick up Nyagemba and say he's the commissioner. You've got commissioners who are going to weigh all the things that you are saying. And then when that commissioner arrives, makes the award that will be binding. The issue here is that an award is binding. An arbitration award is binding. Thank you, sir.
On this issue, I think let's put it aside. Let's put it on the parking lot, and then check if there are other examples that we can use, because we don't have to agree 100% in this meeting. But we need to establish if there is sufficient consensus in the discussion and debate. We don't have to agree 100% on everything. But let's put it in the parking lot, and then we can revisit it later if we still see need for that. But it's okay that when people are not following something, let's not just agree because we feel tired and we want to go home. But it must be because we... at least we're able to understand what we're talking about. And it's not because Honorable Nyagemba does not understand. It's because he does not agree, you know. He doesn't agree with the system of a same institution having right to override a decision of an arbitrator. So I think we'll have to come back to that one again later. And maybe as we move, some of the things the question may get answered as we go. And let me thank everybody for...
You must be clear that the revolution must always be protected. You must be aware that those who look like you
and us... So let's quote a day.
And then we meet again tomorrow, what time? 9 o'clock, same venue. Tomorrow 9 o'clock, same venue. Thank you very much.
I've been telling you what, it's not a prank. Well,
I'm telling you what.
If you want to,
I don't know.
Just don't walk out.